Hello and welcome to the Danske Digital Advantage podcast series. I'm Wendy Austin. In this series, we'll be talking to interesting, insightful people about a range of topics from digital strategy to resilience to employee engagement. And actually, that's where we're starting. COVID has led to massive changes for all of our lives. For businesses, it's meant the very real challenges of keeping going and maintaining employee engagement when so many were, and now continue to be, working from home. For Danske Bank, that's meant keeping branches open, supporting customers through the pandemic, and managing 1,000 people working from home. And that's a huge task for HR Director at Danske, Caroline van der Velts. Caroline, I'm delighted that you're our first podcast guest. Tell me how you brought staff along that digital journey that COVID really forced upon us.
Hello, Wendy. And I guess, where do you really begin? There's no doubt that it's been challenging for our people, both personally and also in terms of how they've had to adapt their jobs and their roles to serve our customers. We've had a lot of colleagues whose roles are customer facing, and it's been very difficult for them. And we've been so proud at how they've responded and embraced the new normal. I think a lot of people within financial services generally have been buoyed by being classed as key workers and getting that recognition for how important their roles are in society. But you're absolutely right. We would have prided ourselves with being a flexible organisation with many flexible work practices in place historically. But the shift that not technology, but a small virus has enabled with migrating 1,100 people virtually overnight to work from home has been an absolutely immense shift, and one which has been actually surprisingly easy. And I think companies in general have been surprised at just how quickly they and their employees have managed to integrate home life and the need to work from home.
Tell me a bit about the nuts and bolts of that. That's probably not the right terminology anymore, given that we're all digital. But you moved, as you said, 1,100 people out of the office to work from home virtually overnight. How on earth did that work?
So I think, you know, very much in terms of the employee experience within that, first and foremost was to be able to understand individuals' personal circumstances. At the same time, when we were in lockdown, of course, the schools closed and people have caring responsibilities, and our employees very much had to adapt to huge changes, not just working from home, but a complete shift in terms of everything that they were required to do within their lives to keep things running over and to make sure that their prioritisation focused on what they needed to do at any one time. I think for us, the initial phase was clearly making sure that we had the right kit that people could work from home. And for those that had to continue to work on physical premises, our branch staff who so courageously stepped up to the mark, we needed to make sure that we had appropriate measures in place to keep them safe and to make sure that in the work environment, we reduced any anxiety around coming into contact or indeed contracting COVID, for example. And there was a real shift in terms of people either working full time at home or full time actually on premises. And that was a lot to get used to. And that was a cultural shift for us as well. Before, we had a much more equitable arrangement where the majority of our people still had a physical presence and we were going to really two operating models. And that also negated, some of the one size fits all approaches that we would have had to policies, procedures and so on. I think what it has also really caused is a challenge in leadership. Because our leaders now were so used to physically leading people in locations and seeing them at least for some of the week, if not all of the week in person. So they needed to split how they actually led as well to cope and adapt to what was huge anxiety levels across the employee base, but also the challenge in managing productivity. So how do you manage productivity when some of your people are very physically present and it's very easy to see what they're doing and what they're producing? To those that have had to work from home and leading vast remote teams across, you know, hundreds of different locations across Northern Ireland. And that is a huge challenge for leaders. And we've seen that in general around the uptake and some of the additional support, help and training that we've provided to leaders in order to, for them to be comfortable and confident themselves and able to lead appropriately.
Yes, appropriately is interesting, isn't it? You know, what about the change that has had to take place in leadership style, with the boss in many instances in the same boat as everyone else, perhaps working from home with all of those responsibilities that, that you've mentioned already. Has that called for the bosses to be different, for leaders to be maybe more personal, more empathetic, more authentic?
I think the answer to that is absolutely yes. And I think there's a number of reasons behind that. I think viruses don't necessarily respect file and rank. So everybody has been in the same boat at the same level of domestic challenges, personal anxieties as well. And I think because we've shifted very much to a virtual and digital first method of communicating, that has been in people's houses. So you have very much had a window of, you know, where does the chief exec or where does my boss actually live? What kind of conditions are my employees having to continue working within? And I think it's opened up insights into people's lives that they haven't seen before in terms of children in the background, dogs, etc. There's lots of examples of really seeing and having a different perspective on people and having to open up and be, I guess, much more empathetic to people as well. I think we've seen that in the types of conversations that people are having. Meetings will very much generally open with a simple question, how are you? And that really does set a tone for how meetings go and actually the relationship between people in the organisation, irrespective of levels, irrespective of remits as well. So empathetic leadership is something that we have definitely seen much more strongly demonstrated. And I think that has really defined those that have managed to lead well and had good employee engagement across the piece to those that perhaps have struggled with opening up a little bit, being themselves more authentically at work and leading with empathy as well.
What about the relationship that the bank has now with its customers? I mean, you've mentioned the fact that your branches have been open and we see people queuing outside, socially distanced, obviously, to get into banks at the moment. But for older or more vulnerable customers, you set up this check-in and chat, and that's been a real success, hasn't it?
No, it has, and it's been a success, I think, as much for our employees as it has been our customers. We set ourselves a target to try and make sure that we were reaching out to people, not necessarily on a banking agenda, but actually in terms of our responsibility to society across Northern Ireland. And we very much pride ourselves in being a responsible company and a responsible bank and living up to the recognition that we've had as most responsible company within Northern Ireland. We've had around 100 of our customers across Northern Ireland, a lot in the Northeast, who formed our check-in and chat team. And they really started to call customers to firstly see how they were doing. And a lot of the customers that would have come into our branches would have been classed as that awful term vulnerable, which really has lots of quite negative connotations, but is so important in order to try and make sure that our people are safe. So was there a way that we could connect and help them? And that help could be in terms of their banking needs, in terms of how to go about certain transactions. But it also was as much a chance for a chat and a conversation with somebody that perhaps had been shielding, that had been inside for weeks and dare I say it, months, and perhaps hadn't had a conversation with somebody, sadly, for some time. So I think from a customer outreach perspective, it's been hugely positively received letters that we've had into the bank. But I think our people have found it really rewarding as well. They were also very isolated, working from home. And I think it gave them some real purpose. And people like to feel that they're adding value and they're adding goodness to other people's lives. And very much our colleague base have very much of that as part of their culture and their DNA. So for them, connecting purposefully with customers, making a difference, helping them out has been a hugely engaging activity. And something that we're going to take forward into our post-COVID world, whatever that might look like, whenever that might happen, in terms of a voluntary activity to make sure that our people, their time on voluntary activities to reach out will be continued. And we'll continue to monitor and set ourselves sort of targets to make sure that we're living up to our ambitions to be a really responsible bank.
Well, it's interesting that that's had that positive effect on the staff who've been involved in it. And actually, the staff as a whole, I mean, it is very interesting that your staff engagement is so high, evidenced by the latest score for Northern Ireland and amongst the group as a whole. Tell us a bit about how you think you've achieved that remarkable figure.
Absolutely fascinating is the engagement story. We would have been sitting around about 80% on against an engagement index a number of years ago. And as we've progressed through this pandemic, our engagement has increased month on month. Our peak really hit 97%, which I don't think even we foresaw to get to those levels of engagement. And I think if we unpick beneath that, why is that the case? There is some obvious obvious rationale behind that. So I do think people have felt as if they have a very strong purpose in terms of continuing to keep the doors open and the lights on in branches and be able to serve our customers, especially those that perhaps would not be as computer literate and able to easily transfer onto perhaps digital banking. But I think it's been really important to serve our businesses and our corporates across Northern Ireland as well, as they've navigated a very difficult time. So people have really felt that they've had a really significant, important role to play. And I think that's been underpinned by financial services, as I mentioned earlier, being classed as a key worker industry. We are very important to keep Northern Ireland running again and ensure that we weather this storm as best as we can and we come out the other side in as best a shape as we can. So supporting our businesses and supporting our customers give our people a really strong purpose. I think there's other aspects that perhaps would have been disengages for our people before. The speed and the bureaucracy and the regulation within banking obviously means that there's a lot of processes to navigate. And I think, you know, as all big institutions, we love our processes and we love our policies and we loved our forms. And I think what we've had to do in order to survive, in order to continue to be able to be serving our customers, is really radically look at digitally transforming our bank. It's been digital transformation on steroids, I think, for many companies across Northern Ireland. And, you know, we've cut through a lot of the previous ways of working and moving authorizations digitally, even from an HR perspective. Looking at digitally recruiting people has really speeded up the process. And I think that has removed an awful lot of the frustrators that our people maybe felt on being a less bureaucratic organisation than we would previously been, to where we are now, which is really leading digitally and really looking for creative solutions to get the right outcome. And I think that has really motivated people as well. And, you know, the ability to do things quickly and really suggest better ways of doing things has been an important part of our journey, and I think has absolutely contributed to better engagement across. And I think communication, in terms of the third leg, there's been much more communication across the bank and conversations as people have needed to talk more, people have needed to check in more. And I think that obviously the old adage, the more you communicate, the more people understand and the more engaged they are. And it's in many ways been easier. You haven't had to wait till somebody came into the office or you happen to be in a meeting with somebody. Technology and products such as Microsoft Teams have really enabled people to communicate in a different way, communicate quicker, and communicate much more purposefully.
What about mental health, Caroline? We've heard a great deal about the potential damage that the pandemic has been doing to people's well-being. What's been the experience of the workforce in Danske?
It is a continuing concern. I think people's mental health, as we go in and out of various lockdowns regionally and across Northern Ireland, is definitely taking its toll. And I don't think it'll be until we go through this and look back that we will actually really understand the journey that people's mental health have had. I think the work experience needs to be looked at first in that. And Microsoft published some figures. They looked at how people have been working during the period from February to August. And the work experience itself has been really important in terms of something that can make or break mental health in the workplace. Microsoft have seen a 48% increase in Microsoft Teams chats and 55% increase in meetings going into people's diaries. And that's a huge shift given everything else that people have had to take on. So I think there's been a number of really kind of critical issues really concentrating on people's mental health, not just the anxiety and the requirement to balance more. And I think there's a number of ways that we have sought to address that. I think calling it first, is important, and making that a permissible conversation, asking how people are at the beginning of meetings and how they really are. And I think we've grown in organisational confidence about having those conversations when people are having good days and when they actually just need to talk to somebody. So I think it's becoming more permissible again to talk about mental health. I think we've also run a number of sessions focusing on aspects of mental health where people can make a difference to their own mental health or the mental health of their colleagues and their teams. We've reached out to some of our external partners and run sessions on thriving in a time of crisis. We've run sessions on for our leaders as well, who have really also absorbed an awful lot of employee anxiety across the organisation. And they have been really well attended. We've had literally hundreds and hundreds attending those sessions. And if you think about how much else people have it on at this time, and the fact that they've made time to attend to those sessions and learn how they can better manage their mental health, I think has really underpinned the value of that. And I think we've also looked at some clever and creative ways that people can think about their work day to manage their mental health. So thinking about the concept of a virtual commute, for example. And the reason that's important is, I think, as people work from home, that disconnection and separation between being at home and being in the office has become very blurred, and really good mental health and good mental health hygiene comes with good separation. So we've run a number of sessions on, you know, how can you look at your commute and entering into the workplace, turning off notifications, perhaps getting out of the house before you log on in the morning, having one place to work, planning your day and planning when you stop. It's very important, I think, for people to understand how they separate. Telling somebody about your day, it's so easy just for 1 hour to bleed into the next. And, you know, we've seen many more meetings. I think Microsoft again showed a statistic of 69% of people are having meetings out of hours on mediums such as Teams. And that's not good for mental health, where people can't compartmentalise and do the things that kept them alive and kept them healthy pre-pandemic: exercise, getting outside, spending time, albeit virtually, with friends. So that we've put a huge amount of effort into thinking about how we can have touch points throughout the working week that we re-remind people. And obviously, as they learn new techniques and new habits and ritualise that, it becomes part and parcel of how they work.
And what sort of evidence have you had of the way that your workforce are coping at the moment? When are they being sick? Are they having days off? How's that panning out?
Well, it's been a really interesting and, again, unexpected pattern to what we anticipated. When we went into lockdown, we were very much expecting high absence rates as people went off, not just with contracting potentially COVID and the other seasonal ailments that people would get, but also around isolation and the need to obviously be away from the workplace, wherever that might be. Interestingly, and we're not alone in this, we've actually seen an improvement, ironically, at the time of a pandemic, in terms of the number of people who are off sick from work. And again, our parent in Denmark, they have seen a 25-year low during the pandemic. So we're very consistent, and I don't think we're alone in terms of seeing absence rates reduce. I think working from home also perhaps makes it easier from a psychological perspective to get to work and provides less barriers to getting there. Those are downsides, which we've spoken about, but obviously upsides as well, around making it easier to get to work for people who were perhaps feeling a little under the weather. So our absence has been, you know, hugely reduced, about 41% down. But interestingly, when we look beneath that, and some of the areas that we were very keen to understand was perhaps those that are under are off absent on stress and anxiety and mental health reasons. And really interestingly, we saw a reduction year on year, the pre-pandemic to current pandemic, in terms of the absence related to anxiety. And that's been really interesting for us. One, I think some of the work that we have done has obviously helped the focus on mental health and well-being. So we've seen a decrease in year on year on the amount of people who are going off on the grounds of mental health. And that's been really interesting to really unpick and understand what is behind that. People that would have previously been off on stress and anxiety and mental health grounds has reduced. I think some of that is down to some of the much greater focus on mental health than perhaps we would have had before, because we were responding to a pandemic. But I also think we've seen more returns to work from those that would have been off long-term sick and perhaps incapacitated. So there's lessons there, I think, for organisations in flexible working and enabling much more home working to try and encourage and help people return to the workplace in a pattern that works for them as well.
Danske was the Business of the Community in Northern Ireland Responsible Business of the Year in the last awards. You mentioned that, in fact, and you've now been awarded a Silver Charter Mark by Diversity Mark NI, only the second company here to be in that situation. So many congratulations on that. What happens to diversity and inclusion during and indeed after COVID?
I think there has been huge challenges for the diversity and inclusion agenda during the pandemic. If you consider where we started back in March, and obviously the very first people that were told to go home were those that were classed as vulnerable. And it's an interesting word. It has many, many negative connotations as well. The purpose behind that was clearly the right one, to keep people as safe as possible. But it undeniably affected segments of our society very differently to others. If we think about those that were older, they were told to work from home for their own safety. Those with disabilities or those with medical conditions that might have put them greater at risk, they were told to work from home. And I think the whole position on caring responsibilities and parenting and general domestic responsibilities has really been an interesting situation to watch. There's been many surveys out in terms of the impact on females in the population, naturally picking up an awful lot of that, and studies shown that where perhaps women in the workplace would have seen around 23% of the responsibility for domestic duties rising to 57% through the pandemic. So an awful lot of the work that has been done on, you know, gender across the bank in terms of disability, in terms of age, has really taken a step back, I think, for every organisation as we go back and we actually start to think these problems through again and think about our responses to that. Of course, I think there has been upsides in terms of the diversity and inclusion agenda. We've had to think much more creatively around how we make sure that people are included. And technology has been one of those enablers. So making sure that people can connect in, be part of teams, talk to their colleagues, and really be able to be purposefully delivering at extensive flexibility and really bucking the normal trend of working arrangements in terms of people working in and around homeschooling requirements and perhaps having events or meetings at a time of day and at a time of the week that really kind of balances that has been helpful as well. So I think it has posed challenges for diversity and inclusion. I think we're in a good place. We were very well positioned, and clearly being the first bank in Northern Ireland to get the diversity silver diversity charter mark has been fantastic. And a lot of the preparation and a lot of our employee engagement and those employees across our organisation, which has really been the grassroots affinity groups across the bank that have really enabled our success in diversity and inclusion, have been able to really come to the fore and really start to solve some of these problems. I think what it has done is move us away from perhaps simple diversity categories and much more around how do you create a sense of belonging in an organisation and how can you ensure true inclusivity regardless of people and where they show up and how they show up and how they identify as well. And I think that will have a much stronger and more sustainable sort of future pathway than perhaps if the pandemic hadn't have happened.
So how do we move on, Caroline? How do organisations, companies like your own and the corporates that you deal with as well, move on, keep the best bits of what has happened in the last 6-8 months, but change? Because it's not going to go back to the way that things were, and not just anytime soon, but it's not going to go back to the way that things were anytime, really, is it? What are you going to focus on hanging on to, making work even better for you, and maybe what's going to or likely to fall by the wayside?
So I think the obvious first point to start on is where people work. So I think we are, amongst many other companies, thinking about the need to come into the office and how do we balance people's human need to be together. People need people. but also balance the positive, engaging aspects of being able to choose to work from a place that suits you and suits your needs at any given time. We were in the process of bringing people back on a personally driven agenda, really, where they can. Obviously, for our branch staff, they need to be physically present in the workplace to serve our customers. But there are other roles that we can have a sort of virtual and video first as a concept for working. What it has done is show that work is an activity and not a location. And I think that is something that we are very much taking into the future as we look at future places to work. I think some of the positive aspects on sustainability, on the green agenda around less travelling, it's been very important to us up to now in terms of being a sustainable organisation with sustainable products and so forth. And I think this also will add to our thinking on how we become more sustainable across all of our strands, perhaps not only product led, but actually really questioning around commuting and commuting journeys. I think it really forces to the fore, how do people come together to work? So why are they coming together, and how do we use the workplace going forward when people will be able to collaborate? And what does that workspace actually look like to really get the most of people physically coming together and getting the productivity upsides and the engagement upsides of being able to work separately and at home? So those things will very much form part of our thinking. I think some of the lessons learned during COVID, so by that I mean some of the more innovative, agile practices that we've really put into practice rapidly and at pace, will very much form part of our future, our hackathon activities to really look at crowdsourcing in a virtual and digital way has enabled many more people across the organisation to get involved in helping us crack some of the problems, crack some of our future corporate strategy. And that is very much something which has been so positively received with such positive outputs. And I also think that we have challenged some of our ways of working as an organisation and very much in terms of HR. When we look at our journey through COVID, we have continued to recruit during this period. We undertook more than 200 interviews, and we really quickly pivoted that from face-to-face being a very traditional method of recruiting to all online, virtually inducting more than 80 people during the lockdown period alone. We've held a number of reflective sessions with them, and that has actually worked very, very well. It's enabled from our diversity and inclusion agenda for people to be interviewed at a time that suits them as well, and has really enabled us to also increase our borders. So where people are working remotely and where we have specific skills gaps in the organisation, some of our technological skills and some areas where Northern Ireland perhaps don't have the supply that the demand is requiring, we can go across borders. So there's no reason why our future workforce has to be physically positioned in Northern Ireland. We can look at filling some of the skills gaps from other geographical locations, both within the UK and much further afield. And that is a huge upside. And I think we've learned a lot through rapid training. So we undertook huge training during the pandemic. We had more than 1,300 of our employees undertake some COVID-related training activity, be that on leadership, be that on team behaviour, be that in operational processes. And that has really changed our thinking as well. The rapid training, that all being delivered digitally, and the positive outputs and application that we've seen has been incredibly heartening and really bodes well for the future. And also how people have worked. So we've had about 15% of our population have ended up doing jobs that they typically and perhaps contractually haven't been employed to do. But I think fired by the purpose to keep the lights on, keep the doors open, and to really be able to help, has seen, you know, huge hundreds of our people doing jobs in the bank that they would not have done before. So I think that agile working, broadening careers, breaking down silos, collaborating and engaging, much greater networking across the organisation is definitely something which will be part of our future way of working.
You spent much of your career in London. You're back at home here in Northern Ireland now. And setting aside the COVID figures, which are not good at the moment, but is this a better place to be? You know, companies here have a resilience that has come from 50 years of other difficulties. Has that made them perhaps better prepared to deal with what's happened at the moment and what's to come?
I think it has. I think people have been used to digging deep, I think, over the years, and I think people have been used to really becoming much more resilient. I think for some areas of the UK who perhaps haven't had such a significant trauma in their past, the trauma that people are experiencing now, you know, is different in terms of the cause of that. But I think we are seeing people really reflecting on how they've got through other trauma in their past, and perhaps the mentality in some areas that, well, we've got through things before and we will get through this, is very much the kind of Northern Ireland cultural norm. And I think that is definitely holding our people in good stead. I think we are fortunate here from purely practical considerations around commuting. We don't have the same reliance on high volume tubes and trains always that we have perhaps, you know, I would have definitely and personally experienced during my many decades in London. So I think the ability here to travel in a safer way has also helped us. I think we have more space and it is, you know, less density as well. So I think from a mental health perspective, the ability to get out and get out into healthy environments is an awful lot easier here than it is perhaps in London, for example, as well. So I think, you know, we will definitely, and I think we are all drawing on experiences from the past in terms of our resilience. And I think that muscle becomes quickly built up again. I don't want to devalue or to underestimate the enormity of what people are dealing with at the moment. But I do think our infrastructure here, our outlook and our tenacity and our resilience within our people here will definitely see us through in a very positive way. And I think we will spring back. I'm hopeful that we will spring back perhaps more quickly because of that experience.
You're optimistic then?
I always remain optimistic, and I think certainly looking at the experiences of our people within the organisation, and looking at how quickly that they have rushed to help support Northern Ireland, to help support our businesses across Northern Ireland, and our personal customers across Northern Ireland, and really importantly each other, really bodes well for how we move into the future and get through what we're experiencing now.
Caroline, thanks very much indeed for talking to me today. Thank you for your time on this podcast. This is the Danske Digital Advantage podcast. Thanks for listening. There'll be another one soon. Please subscribe to the series wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us too, and join us for the rest of the series. Thanks for listening.